I'm pretty sure I remember video games being $50, yet seeing a $49.99 price tag in stores seems unfamiliar. I'm of course very acquainted with the $60 price point. This week, Microsoft stated its plan to join the $70 club for all of its first-party titles too, and now two-thirds of console manufacturers and game publishers have made the switch. That just leaves the Switch. This is the intro that references inflation. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are back and live once again with episode number 940 of our show tonight, December the 11th of 2022. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm here every week with my co-hosts. First off, say hi to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Oh.
Hello, hello. I like...
Hi.
Yeah, you can. You're spotting a. I don't think this is a new wig, but you're spotting a nice looking wig tonight.
It's. I was gonna wear the red lace front. Mm-hmm. You know, the one I really like, but I don't know. I just felt like black hair went with green makeup.
It works. It works.
Green.
I do. I see it on the eyes. Well, I know we're talking a lot of visuals, so sorry to the podcast crowd. We do love y'all that subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes.
Up on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, you know, folks sometimes make clips of the show, but you can also always access the video archive over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork because we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, usually right after the Bobby Blackwolf show at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, VOG Network. I say usually after Bobby Blackwolf because he is not, he wasn't on tonight. He's taking some Bobby time this week. Actually, some Bobby and Mrs. Bobby time this week. So they are doing some other stuff tonight. So he will be back on December the 25th, even though it is a pretty well-known holiday. He still plans to be back that night because I believe, as he put it, he does all of his celebrations on the eve. Which may actually end up being the same thing I do this year. I don't know. We'll see. I'm still trying to figure that out. So hopefully I'll know for next week because believe it or not, we're 2 weeks away from December the 25th. So, and then we're 3 weeks away from New Year's. So it's
1 week away from Hanukkah, and that's important.
It's a little more kind of at the end of December this year as opposed to, I think last year it was practically in November, wasn't it?
Yeah. And actually I got something stuck in my head and like got all my stuff out a week early and then like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, say hello as well to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi. And that is not a wig. That is all his natural hair, folks. Just so you know. Loki, I heard Dark Soccer, I think, recognized the game playing behind you tonight. But what is the game behind you playing tonight and why?
It is a stall. Mm-hmm. It is a game from the Saturn. It's one of the first games I played on the Saturn. And it's like, I remember back then it was like, oh man, it's like an anime. It's like so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it had really cool cutscenes and everything. And it was a really nice, like 2D platformer.
And it flowed.
Excellent music. Excellent music.
I just remember being enamored with the backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's with all the colors.
It's another one of those games where it's like, we didn't think video game graphics could get any prettier, and then here we are. I remember the first time I played Mario Brothers 2, actually, Super Mario Brothers 2, which we all know was a remake of a Japanese game, but you know, I didn't know that when I was, 10 years old and that game came out. So when I saw that game for the very first time, I was like, oh my gosh, it's like a cartoon. I'm playing a cartoon on my TV. These graphics are so good. Because remember, you know, my first system was an Atari 2600, you know, and like many systems of that same era, be it, you know, Coleco or whatever, the graphics were pretty blocky. I mean, it was cool as hell at the time because, again, it was like, oh, I'm playing these on my TV at home and not in an arcade. But like Mario Brothers 2 was the first time I remember thinking I'm playing a cartoon, like legit. So,
I mean, to be fair, like back then, the resolution of everything wasn't very big anyways. And
yeah.
You know, coming from like playing stuff on like the Atari 2600 or something like that, it's like, yeah, it's a massive jump in fidelity. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and a standard TV didn't show much more than 640, 480. In fact, I think it was less than that, to be honest. So,
yeah, it was like 240.
Yeah, it was like 240. So, the fact, you know, that it was that perfect resolution for a TV, you know, the NES was just, Yeah, made for some incredible graphics. And then when we got to Super Nintendo, oh boy, like then we really got some cartoon graphics on that one. Yeah.
What?
Going to the chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, Orange Wright says that ending in Super Mario Brothers 2 as well. Oh yeah. You remember that ending in Mario Bros. 2 when you see, you know, Mario sleeping and all that, like that look, when you consider that that's all like sprite based work basically put together to kind of make that, it was really incredible what they did with that whole ending sequence in that game. That looked really, really cool. That I loved when video games had such a rewarding ending like that, right? Like, didn't the Mario Brothers 2 ending feel really good for that era? Like, it was much better than the screen that said, congratulations, the story is happy end, press start to continue. Like, it was much, much more satisfying than something like that, right? Even though when you beat a hard as hell game like Ghosts and Goblins, you'll take whatever the game gives you. Yeah, SSG100 Matt points out Super Mario Brothers 2 was a dream and Super Mario Brothers 3 was a stage play. So what would Super Mario Brothers 4 be? The Matrix? Because we never really did have a Mario Brothers 4. Although I guess Mario World,
well,
I think,
actually numbered Super Mario 4 at its original conception.
Yeah, I was going to say Mario World was technically labeled that, but I guess they didn't actually consider it. It wasn't like part of a show like the others, I guess. So anyway, looking for some other comments in chat. Hello, hello. Hope everybody's doing well. Dr. Tsuya says I was just about to bring up Ghosts and Goblins. So yeah, it's a memorable ending, if nothing else. Anyway.
When it actually ended.
All right, let's move on. We have some gaming news to get into tonight. And of course, the big thing everybody's talking about this week was the Game Awards. Because, you know, I gotta hand it to Jeff. He did manage to create E3 level kind of announcements in December. Like, there's been good years, there's been not so good years of the Game Awards. I would say when it comes to the magnitude of the announcements he had planned and the ceremony itself, for the most part, I would say it was absolutely one of the better years for the Game Awards. Definitely some places to improve. I think for me, the running time was really, remember when he said it wasn't going to be as long as last year? And to be fair, it wasn't. But didn't the Steam Deck thing say they were only going to give away like 150 Steam Deck stops? Or it was like they were planning for 150. And I think it was about, what, 3 hours and 15 minutes if you count the pre-show, right?
Yeah, it was pretty long. And that Steam Deck giveaway thing was kind of, it was a mess. Their player didn't work very well because I actually watched it through that. Cause I was like, what the heck?
Thanks to my internet, I had that playing on one monitor and then I had the 4K version playing on my main monitor.
Right, yeah, so it was a mess, and there is a funny, there's a funny screenshot that's out there, like the very first one was like a user by the name of like MILF Lover or something like that.
Oh yeah, one of the first award winners.
Yeah, so it was just like...
MILF Hunter, says Mike Depp.
MILF Hunter, yeah. Oh, you're right, MILF Hunter, yeah. So everyone's just like, oh, GG, MILF Hunter. And then eventually it like started breaking down because it stopped showing the names and it started showing the Steam IDs. So everybody assumed, oh, the bots are getting it. Oh, the bots are getting it.
No, it's
and
Steam so, IDs. Yeah.
It's fun. It was a fun distraction to watch chat when, like, you know, I didn't want to watch what was on screen or anything. But yeah, lots of big announcements and everything. So
can I speak before we get into the specifics? Can we just kind of speak in some generalities here? I want to go to Mike Defton chat, who says it went for 2 hours and 40 something minutes. Does that count the pre-show or not? Because I'm sorry. The pre-show counts for me, like, because especially when the very first thing they drop on us is that Dead Cells Castlevania. And I'm actually a little disappointed that just isn't a standalone game, because when I first saw that, I was super hype. I was like, yes, this is what I want Konami to do. Give your fucking IPs to people that know how to use them. Dead Cell developers, great choice to do something with Castlevania. But it turns out it's just an expansion for Dead Cells, which is okay. Fine. I'm still interested in that. That's fine. It's a better direction than, you know, Castlevania probably done in-house. But that was the first announcement. And then what? Then they followed that up with, like there was like some major announcements in that 30-minute little block.
Yeah, there was a new Hellboy game.
Yeah, that was a big one too. Sorry, Miltonius Games in chat says pre-show totally counts if it has world premieres. That's what I'm saying. And honestly, they just need to fold that into the main show. Like, let the ostrich lady or flamingo lady, excuse me, let the flamingo lady, because her outfit looked a little flamingo-y, let that pre-show get folded into the main show. And she can still, you know, have her thing. She's been doing that a few years. It should just really be part of the main show at this point. I'm not sure why they call that a pre-show. There were the news coming out of that was way too big. One other thing I want to get out of the way, because everybody's talking about it, too many people are talking about it, so it needs to be addressed. And that is the literal child that got up on stage at the end and said whatever he said after Elden Ring won its Game of the Year award, right? We all know he went up there and said Bill Clinton something something, which was interesting because social media immediately said it was a coded white supremacy message. But unfortunately, social media has a tendency to run with headline and literal Twitter size thing and not facts. And the fact is that he was a young, because these outlets have interviewed him after the fact. They're giving him way too much attention, but whatever. It was here's that attention you ordered. He was a literal child, 15-year Jewish, I believe, IRL shit poster. That's all that was. That was an IRL shit post and the type of behavior you would expect out of a 15-year-old child. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because the onus on that moment, I think, goes to Jeff and his security team and all of that. Like, how in the fuck did that kid get up on stage
so
to do
many,
that?
Like, questions.
And the way him being Jewish has, like, to do with it.
How did a 15-year-old get into the event in the first place? Where, how did, like, I'm assuming he's not from the area, so how did he get to the area to be on the show?
Well, anyone could buy a ticket. They were selling the tickets publicly.
Right, but, like, you know, I mean, if my child just disappeared.
Oh, like, yeah, true. Where were the parents, right? Yeah, no, yeah, like, yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah, you're just flying to California. Okay, sure. Yeah, bye. I mean, yeah. Like.
Yeah, that's the thing. And Mike Def says, how the fuck did they let that happen at all? It could have been so worse. Yes, it could have been an actual really bad message that gets out there and, you know, gives the show and gamers in general a really bad reputation. And that is the type of, unfortunately, shenanigans that, and I, you know, Jeff Keighley's pissed that that happened, especially when he goes out there and he tweets, we arrested the person that did the thing. And, you know, you could see that look on his face, just looked like he was just pissed at the end there. But the reality is, the fact that you let that happen in your security that you contracted with, let that happen, is what is holding your show back from being the Oscars. Although at the same time, you look at what happened at the Oscars this past year, and I guess they don't have much security either. So I'm not sure what this says about award shows at all.
Right. And it's a weird scenario, but it was almost nothing, because it was like, oh, okay, you said something weird, and then you disappeared, like, and that was it, like, I don't know. I didn't even realize it was somebody that wasn't, I thought it was somebody making a really bad joke, and then, like, I didn't understand, I'm like, whatever, people are gonna be weird, I guess.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was, like, someone that wasn't with the group, and that's fine, I mean, like, I get it, but, like, yeah, it could have been worse, but it was also really stupid, too, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, and SJ100 Matt brings up a point and why I addressed it earlier. SJ100 Matt says, the reason why the Jewish thing came into play was because people thought the Bill Clinton thing was a veiled anti-Semitic comment. So Jason Schreier interviewed him in Hebrew, and he understood it and then pretended not to. So my point with that... Yeah, right? It was that Jason Schreier, he's a sneaky, sneaky, sneaky guy. But it was a good... That's what a journalist does, to pull a fast one. Anyway, but my point.
Although, granted, not everybody understands Hebrew.
But the fact that everybody was running with it was a terrible thing that this child said on stage. No, it was just a shit post. But granted, we need to take a moment to realize it could have been a really bad thing. So anyway, that's all the attention I want to give that. It's more than enough. Done. The other thing that I think was the big, like, everybody's talking about it moment was Christopher Judge's acceptance speech. Now, look, I got nothing but love in my heart for Christopher Judge. He did a great job in God of War Ragnarok, We all know his speech went on a little long. And this is why the Oscars does a nominees luncheon ceremony to talk about these sorts of things, about keeping it short. I also want to point out something that really struck me about that speech and then the subsequent speeches were that they started to raise the music up on Christopher Judge about 5 minutes into that speech, where I think the Oscars gives you about 45 seconds. They started to raise 5 minutes. Every subsequent speaker that night, they started to raise the music a lot faster. That was a little inconsistent, and in my opinion, kind of didn't look very professional at that point, because they weren't doing it consistently, and it looked like they were doing it because of what happened with Christopher Judge. I just think that was a nobody told him how to do it, so he really just spoke from the heart and kept speaking and kept speaking. And I understand there's a lot to say. Look, this bitch and my bitches do a 2 to 3 hour show every week about video games. Okay. Like, I get it. There's sometimes a lot to say, but in the context of these award shows where you're paying people to be there and so forth, you do have to ask people to tighten it up a little bit. Right. You know, and plan on only the 45 seconds. So again, I felt that a lot less on Christopher Judge and more on nobody preparing Christopher Judge or any of the nominees. And then I guess the last thing I could say is the teleprompter seemed to have problems a couple of times in the night. Al Pacino did not seem to be a fan of the teleprompter. Roberta Williams, I could see, was not enjoying the teleprompter either. But it is what it is. It's a teleprompter, right? So, yeah. Let's see, going to some comments in chat. Jessix in chat says, these people always saying something incomprehensible. Whatever happened to just mooning the audience? I do want to remind that child was 15, so not that one. But if we're going to throw back to the Oscars streaker, who was 20 or 30, you know, then, whatever happened to a good old streaker? Like, that's, let's
have become desensitized to butts.
How about that? I'd like to put out a challenge, not really, because I don't want to get in trouble, but I'd like to put in a fake joke challenge. I want to see a streaker at the Game Awards 2023. Let's, of age, please.
I referenced one of my favorite ever things to have ever come out of the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Will Ferrell and Jack Black singing the Get Off the Stage song.
Mm-hmm.
They said, did you know that the Get Off the Stage song has words? And I was like, every time I hear any Get Off the Stage music, I just think of them. It was like, look at Catherine Zeta-Jones. She's snoring.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's the whole thing. If they gave lyrics to it, I bet everyone would actually get off the stage and just listen to the song.
I would worry about a comedy bit at the Game Awards, though. Well, I guess they sometimes do they did like the animal thing, which was cute. Like, I'm always going to have room in my heart for a Muppets moment. But it really just made me go, I wish the Muppets would host the Game Awards. Not that I have a problem with Jeff Keighley, but I just feel like the whole thing would just have more pep in it if the Muppets hosted, you know? Like, Jeff Keighley does feel a little vanilla at this point, and I don't know a nice way to say it. I'm not trying to be mean. Again, I liked this award show a lot more than most of the others. It's just, I feel like a little, let's spice it up weird. A little bit. I don't know.
It also feels weird to have, like, Animal there without, like, it tying into, like, literally anything.
Yeah, that's, like, where was Miss Piggy unavailable? I mean, but again, I like Animal, but it did seem like, why that particular Muppet? I don't know. Where's the love for Janice and her band? Or why, can't, like, if we're gonna do some deep cut and Muppets, let's get Scooter and Skeeter out there to reaffirm that they are indeed Muppet babies.
Only tunes.
All right. Yeah, Orange Right. That's a good one. Orange Right in chat says, people on Mastodon were saying, where were Statler and Waldorf? Now, those are the Muppets I want to see at the Game Awards.
Yes. Yes. That'd be good.
Because they knew they'd have nothing nice to say.
That's great.
Then they just need to start, like, piping up when people take too long with their speeches.
Yeah.
And start ripping into them.
You used to hear the small voice from the balcony. Boo! Move! Leave!
I would never do that, Christopher Judge, though. But Questbusters
you
says,
"You know what I mean."
Yeah, Questbuster says, "I'm sure Judge, as an actor for years, knew that he was running the clock, but he was so emotionally invested in the moment alongside someone who was probably one of the reasons for him getting into the craft in the first place." Oh, for sure. Again, I'm not really faulting Christopher Judge in that scenario. I'm faulting what I believe, or what I'm interpreting, was a lack of preparing Christopher Judge to say to all the nominees, "Okay, if you get selected, you get a chance to go up on stage, think about what you want to say in a minute. We have to limit you to a minute, but we'll allow you to make a further statement online if you want to do that at thegameawards.com, and we'll publish it on Twitter. But when you get 50 seconds into your speech, you're going to hear the music come up, and that is the sign that we need you to wrap it up. And then at a minute 15, we're going to take," like, they need to just outline, this is how it's going to go. And I don't think anybody did that.
They need to make sure that they don't do it via email, that they give them a physical card.
That actually is a brilliant call out, because you're right, it might have been in an email.
I mean, people will gloss over email, and I bet anyone who has any certain amount of notoriety is probably going to have people that check their mail for them.
Yeah.
So I think that it needs to be sent out in a formal card.
A card on the
laminated
seat.
Yeah. Something, an easy text, something that's eye-catching, that says, "Here's how not to be a shit."
Do you think Jeff is going to send Christopher Judge an email on Monday that says, "Per my last email"?
No.
Miltonius Games in chat says, "This email should have been a meeting." Yes, that's why the Oscars do a nominee's lunch, and that's when they talk about all that stuff. They buy them lunch, at least. So I think
should have bought them lunch.
They should have bought them lunch. Exactly. Come on. There's.
I would listen to people who give me free food.
That's right. There's my suggestion for the Game Awards 2023. I want to see a streaker, and I want to see the nominees get bought lunch. All right. Okay, Loki, let's get into the weeds. What were some of the other announcements of the Game Awards?
So I mentioned that there was a new Hellboy game based off the comics, so Web of Word. And there's the announcement that Vampire Survivors is going free on mobile, which is pretty cool.
That was kind of a random surprise, but I'm excited to see that.
We got another look at Horizon Call of the Mountain, which looks pretty cool. I can't wait to check that out at some point. Post Trauma, which kind of looks like Silent Hill.
I literally thought it like was a Silent Hill thing, and I was like, didn't Konami already put their cards on the table? So that was maybe that's the one that got rejected, Silent Hill, and so they decided to do something different with what they built. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, it's not waste the assets.
Not waste the time, yeah.
Viewfinder, which is a game that allows you to kind of alter the world with a camera. And so it kind of, there's another one that's just like,
I swear to God, I played a game like this at the Pop Culture Museum when I was in Seattle, because you know they have an indie game room, right? And there was a game I played that was, I don't remember the name, but it was very much that same thing, where it was like you look around in a picture, and then like when you line it up the right way, it kind of turns into something else. You turn it into a different thing. Like there's an indie game very similar to this. And I honestly thought I was looking at a trailer for like the indie game coming to PS5 or something.
Yeah, there's one like that where you can also like grab objects and it changes size based off of like perspective or something like that, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Atomic Heart, which looks pretty cool. It's kind of like a, almost like a Fallout, or I'm trying to think of the other one that was like Fallout, but it's not. I can't remember it, but I did play it and I love that game. But that looks pretty cool. There was Scars Above, which is like a sci-fi action shooter game. Relic Hunter's Legend, some online looter shooter. Among Us is getting a new hide and seek mode.
That looked pretty fun.
They had that, was it After Us, which is like some sort of platformer environmental type game thing.
That reminded me of one you skipped over during the pre-show, or you said it so fast I missed it. Returnal on PC. That got me very excited. Just saying.
Haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, my bad. I thought that was during the pre-show.
This is all still, I think, pre-show.
Oh, shit. All right, my bad.
Yeah, so Replaced, which was a sci-fi platformer. Then there's also, they had another trailer for Street Fighter VI, which is, they announced there's going to be a 2v2 mode, and I think it's also supposed to be coming out in June now.
I think they did date it. Yeah, it looks real good. I gotta say, yeah, like there's something about those even numbered Street Fighters.
And then I think this is getting into the show now. I know Hades 2, I think, was the first game that they announced at the show, which looked fantastic.
That was huge because Supergiant Games, haven't they said they don't make sequels in the past? And here we go. I mean, but if any game deserves, well, I mean, honestly, all of their games could stand to have a sequel. But Hades, like, double so. And Shane is in chat on time saying Hades 2 was the only thing that mattered. I would disagree. It was the only thing that mattered, but I would say it was a genuine surprise. It didn't get leaked in advance. And it was one of those things that definitely led way, you know, especially the fact that it was at the beginning and was a surprise. You know, it just like the beginning hour of the pre-show plus the first part of the show just felt like, damn, like they really are coming out swinging this year. And then unfortunately, we got to the last hour of the show. It wasn't that it was bad, but it was all kind of stuff they kind of told you we would see, like Final Fantasy 16 and that stuff. So, but anyway, Hades 2, I'm all about that. It looks great. I like that they're kind of changing it up and making it about Hades. I think it's Hades' sister, right? But they'll still have, you know, the gorgeous gods and goddesses art. But it looks like generally the gameplay will sort of be similar. So,
yeah. And then we have the new Ken Levine game, which looks like BioShock, but is not Judas. It looks all spacey and kind of crazy, and I'm all about that. It's very much a spiritual successor.
Sorry, Shane says it's Zagreus' sister, not Hades. I did that thing where I said the main character. I said Zelda is the one you play as in The Legend of Zelda. I had a moment like that. Sorry. So, but yes, Zagreus' sister. Sorry, the main character's sister in the game.
But yeah, Judas looks fantastic. Then something out of literally nowhere, Bayonetta Origins, Syriza and the Lost Demon, which looks
weird. I have something to say about that, the Bayonetta spinoff game. So remember when all the Helena Taylor stuff went down a couple months ago? I just want to point out, at that time, I said Nintendo and Platinum are going to be pissed at her because she just told you they're working on a Bayonetta spinoff game. Now, to be fair, this was not the spinoff game I imagined. I thought they were doing it with maybe some of the other characters in the mainline series and so forth. But Helena Taylor told you they were working on a Bayonetta spinoff game. Because remember when she said with me or anybody else doing Bayonetta or something like that, she was using this language about, you know, what types of games they do or if they spin Bayonetta off into a series and all this stuff. Like, so Helena Taylor kind of spoiled this game, but not really, because who could have predicted it was basically a different genre of game and a different art style. It's interesting that the Bayonetta franchise is now at a point where it is making, which is a great thing, but it's making these different like spinoff game types. It's just, it's interesting.
Yeah. And we got a couple more new trailers for Destiny 2 Lightfall and then Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Which looks interesting. They confirmed with the latter one that Kevin Conroy is going to be voicing Batman in that as well. Mm-hmm. It was his last performance. Mm-hmm. Got a trailer for Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which looks pretty cool.
Some of my friends that are really into Star Wars were like losing their minds. It did look really like, you know, I appreciate Star. I think that's a good word. I don't know if I would say like I'm a hardcore fan, but I appreciate Star Wars. And I could see that like the putting together that trailer, that whole moment with what's the actor's name, Cameron Monaghan or whatever, that came out with the lightsaber and everything. Like, yes. They put that whole moment together very well for those fans.
Yeah. And then we have a new game by the creators of Celeste that called Earthblade, which looks pretty awesome. Kind of a similar style game as well. Another trailer for Dune Awakening. No Duke Nukem game for me, unfortunately.
Duke Nukem Awakening.
And surprised to see this in the middle of this show. I thought this would be something they kept towards the end, but we got the announcement of Death Stranding 2, which...
Kojima finally shit! Yay! Refer to last week's show if you need to. But it was nice to see that all confirmed, especially... with the rumors about Overdoser going around as well. Like, it's nice to see what actresses are, you know, are in the Death Stranding 2 and what that all kind of looks like. I mean, obviously, it still didn't make any damn sense, but neither did the first one. It made a lot more sense once you got in there and played it. So, you know, I'm assuming the second one will be very similar.
This makes no sense.
Curious if the second game is going to play like the first game, or is he trying to make it more action-y this time? I don't know. So we'll kind of have to see.
We got a trailer for Tekken 8, which looks like Tekken 8.
Looked nice.
Yeah. Mortals of Avium, which is, I guess, it's a game from Ascendant Studios, who is comprised of people that worked on Call of Duty and Dead Space. It's a first-person magic-based shooter game. So Hexen type game, I guess. Nightingale, which looked kind of interesting. And let's see, Baldur's Gate 3, which was kind of surprising. Wayfinder, which was an online free-to-play action RPG game. Diablo 4, I wasn't even paying attention to this trailer, but yeah, we got a trailer for Diablo 4 and release date, I think.
It's just a cinema cutscene. It had none of the actual gameplay was in it. It was all just a hype for a release date, but Diablo 4 looks really good. And there was a press preview that happened this last week, and a lot of folks are coming out saying, you know, it plays kind of like it has some of the best parts of 2 and then some of the modernizations of 3 kind of all mishmashed together. And some of the early impressions there are pretty favorable. And, you know, if I had played Diablo 4, I wouldn't be able to talk about it. If I'd played Diablo 4, I bet my impressions would have been pretty favorable too. But I guess we'll never know.
Horizon Forbidden West, Burning Shores. It's a DLC for Horizon Forbidden West, taking place in Los Angeles. So we get the Hollywood sign. Fire Emblem Engage. It's a new Fire Emblem game, and I have as little interest in that as I do all the other Fire Emblem games. Blue Protocol, an action MMO that's supposed to be coming out next year by Bandai Namco and Amazon Games. So we'll see. Transformers Reactivate. It's a Transformers game.
That was a wild trailer for a Transformers game.
I honestly thought it might have been a Titanfall game when I, you know.
Oh, good initially call. Yeah.
But then it was Transformers. I was like, oh.
Oh, man. Titanfall 3 would have been a great announcement, but for whatever reason, no.
We got another scene from the Super Mario Brothers movie. This is like something that was comprised of stuff that was in some of the other international TV spots as well. Plus, there was some new footage to it as well. But it's funny, I guess. I don't know. I still want to see it.
The footage was cute, and you know, it kind of sold to me the same thing that second trailer did, and that is that the movie was definitely animated and directed by people that really understand and have a love for the Mario universe, because there's a lot of
just Nintendo in general. Oh, yeah, and a lot of stuff like they're talking about, like the antiques or whatever. It's like, does this thing still work? Well, yeah, you got to blow in it a little bit.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. That's funny. But yeah, no, there's a lot of deep cuts like just all over that. And so, yeah, I just I hope that's the only clip we see. Sometimes with these movies, they release so many clips online and they'll all be over social media. And it's like, I will have seen half the movie because of clips on social media. Yeah. And it's like, honestly, let it be a surprise at this point. You've shown enough. I've come around. At the beginning, I was like, I'll watch it on video. But now I'm like, all right, I'll go see it in the theater. I want to see it. It's cute.
We got a trailer for a game called Remnant 2. Remnant from the Ashes sequel, I guess. Behemoth. It's a MetaQuest VR game. They let you be a Viking. That's neat, I guess. Banishers Ghost of New Eden. I'm not really sure what type of game it is, but it looks cool. Kind of Game of Thrones-ish. Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2. Looks pretty awesome. Meet Your Maker is kind of a neat little thing. So it's a game where you build like outposts, I guess, and then other people raid your outposts and you have to put traps and stuff in them. So that's kind of cool.
So it's Crash... Home Alone.
It's not exactly Home Alone. It's like, yeah, Warhammer meets Home Alone. That's what that is. Yeah.
I'm just imagining now Kevin with a tank.
Crash Team Rumble, which I know has made some people, especially in my circle, very happy. So a new 4v4 game that's kind of out of nowhere there. Lords of the Fallen is got another trailer, and it does look pretty cool. The one that had me surprised, and this may be my new love instead of Saints Row, but Crime Boss Rockay City. It is the game by the folks that put together the Payday series, and it is got a really triple A actor cast and stuff in it, and
Danny Glover, Michael Madsen. There was a lot of
Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger. Okay, but Loki, do you know what I called that game? Grand Theft Boomer. Because it is all
it's supposed to take place in
it's 90. A-list actors and actresses, but they are all over the age of 60. Which
you
is,
know what, I'm totally fine.
No,
with
it's
that.
It's fine, but it's Grand Theft Boomers, but
it looks pretty good too. I've watched gameplay of it, and it looks fantastic.
If you go to the Orange Lounge Radio list of dream games, I believe many hundred episodes ago, we put a dream game on there called Grandma's Got a Gun. And you know what? Kim Basinger, here's her moment. So Grand Theft Boomer it is. Shane does point out, since when is Vanilla Ice an A-list actor? Well, there were other A-list actors in there and Vanilla Ice.
I was thinking more Michael Rooker, but you know. it's fine. It does remind me of a San Andreas or, you know, one of the earlier Saints Row games where they did have big name Hollywood actors voicing the characters in there. And I'm all about that, especially since Saints Row just doesn't know what it wants to be anymore. So bye-bye. So there's an announcement of Call of Duty's raid mode that's coming out. Cyberpunk's new DLC. So Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty starring Idris Elba.
Idris, yeah.
Which looks pretty fantastic.
Another person who could read me the phone book.
I know. I'm glad they brought him in to get people interested in that game again. I think there'll be a lot of people giving that game a second chance.
Armored Core 6.
That was a surprise.
Rubicon. I thought for sure this was good. Yeah, I didn't know that was an Armored. Well, I knew about halfway through the trailer that was an Armored Core game, but I thought it would be kind of cool, like an Armored Core Dark Souls type game. Like, you know, make it that kind of hard, but Armored Core. But it sounds like it's going to be an Dark or a Armored Core Elden Ring type game. So
either way, I felt like you were quaking. When I saw that trailer, I was like, Loki is shaking and crying somewhere about this.
It looked pretty awesome. I was like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then Final Fantasy 16 looks pretty cool. I still don't know what the hell's going on in that, but it looks cool. I just don't like the combat, though. Like, I'm such an old person, but the action combat stuff in there just turns me so off of these games. I really miss the old Final Fantasy combat system, but I'll have to try it again.
I caught Odin in the new trailer, and that made me happy because I didn't see that Odin was one of the whatever they're calling him. It's Esper's summons, whatever they call him in this one.
Why do we have to change it every single time? Just keep the same names.
That's what they do. So, and that was that. That was kind of, I gotta say though, that was a weird thing to put last. No, I mean, I get there's a ton of hype around 16 and so forth, but it was a weird thing to put last because we already knew it was coming. So I'm surprised. I'm kind of surprised that and the Death Stranding 2 thing didn't flip. Although, let's be real, we all knew Death Stranding 2 was coming too. But maybe the Armored Core thing, honestly, is strong enough to have been the last, especially with Elden Ring winning Game of the Year, you know, another From Software venture being the last announcement, I think would have been worthy of that. So
for sure.
Yeah. So how are we feeling about the Game Awards overall? Like, what would you want to see different next year, if anything?
Shorter.
How do we get there, though? I wonder if we can get shorter at this point. I do feel
give it its own version of the daytime Emmys.
In some regards, it's actually not a bad idea.
I think the reason the length is what it is because they're using a lot of this as advertising to pay for the whole thing in the first place as well. Yep. So, like, I don't know if you necessarily need to make it shorter. And I'm fine with it being as long as it is. That's fine. Because if you don't want to watch it, you can just catch the highlights the following day. Yeah. I mean, or even just after it. I mean, it's not a big deal. I don't know. I think it's fine. I think it's fine as it is. There are things that are unnecessary that feel like, what the hell was Animal doing there? Like, that doesn't make any goddamn sense. Like, I don't know what that was about other than, okay, I want this to happen.
Yeah, I think there's just a few things they have to tighten up. I understand they gave away a lot of awards at rapid pace, too, but it's fine. I actually kind of like Jamie's idea, though, because a lot of people are saying you have enough to fill up two nights. And I almost wonder if maybe some of those pre-show announcements shouldn't go into some type of technical award show that's a lunchtime show that happens, you know, the day before or a couple days before or something. I almost wonder if there isn't enough here to have two award shows, but like one is obviously a little more like, you know, the one you're pushing people towards than the other. But then at the same time, you don't want to cut away from the other. So maybe brand, I know people are saying Winter Game Fest, but maybe just, you know, have the whole thing branded as Game Awards. And maybe it could be like Wednesday is the Technical Game Awards. Thursday is the Public Ceremony Game Awards featuring Game of the Year, and, you know, have it be two ceremonies. I really think there is enough to justify that at this point. So,
yeah.
She-Hulk 10 in chat says, show more winners and less trailers. You know, I think a lot of people hesitate to say show less announcements, but I actually think it could stand to curate the announcements a little more. I'm not sure if everything necessitated the time it was given. And I know that sounds really terrible, but especially, I'm going to give an example. A game that was already announced last year that's giving a gameplay update should really get minimal space. If not relegated to a prior award show. I think they need to curate a little more what they're putting into this. But at the same time, you need, you know, all those ad dollars. You need to sell so many ad blocks. So you need things to fill that space. And if it wasn't announcements, then we'd be bitching about lame comedy bits or musical performances. So I understand it's a very tricky navigational game that Jeff has to play. But despite all this, you know, feedback, it sounds like I'm just complaining about it. Actually, I feel like this was one of the better shows. This show is on a good path. They just need to fix security, fix some of these logistical things. And I think it's going to be in a great spot next year. There's just, you know, a few things just glare out. That's it. Yeah. And SJ100 Matt says they actually did show less trailers this year. It didn't feel like it. I'm just keeping it real. It didn't feel like it. Bonds006 says the past year highlights on Wednesday and the actual award on Thursday. I like Miltonius Game's suggestion, a gamer's choice night and then the critics night. That might be a way to split some things up too. You could do those esport related awards and, you know, streamer of the year and stuff like that could be in the gamer's choice night, you know, and some of those things that I really like that idea. That's a good one. So I think he should look at splitting the show a little bit. And I don't, you know, again, people watch 3 days straight of E3. They'll watch two Game Award announcement shows, you know, if it's done well. So, all right. Any last thoughts before we move on? Has anybody pre-ordered, bought, or whatever, anything as a result of the show?
Nope.
I will definitely put Hades 2 on early access. That's for sure. So I can play that on Steam. And then I'm probably going to pre-order or pre-purchase. Because now that's the thing we do now is pre-purchase. But for Diablo 4, I'll do it. So that's always been my favorite Blizzard franchise. And my faith in 4 is very strong. So I will pre-purchase it. So, all right. Let's move on and talk about, instead of things we plan to, oh yes, Mike Def says I will get Street Fighter 6 on launch though. I think I was already sold on 6, but now I'm like really sold. So yeah. All right. Let's get into our gaming weeks. Not the things we're looking forward to, but the things we've already played. Dark Sakura, we'll start with you. How was your gaming week?
It's the same way it usually is for me. I beat Cult of the Lamb. and I'm going to still be playing it a little bit more just to see if I can do some completion on it. I don't want to spoil the ending, but I made a special recruitment as my decision. I, of course, played lots of Dead by Daylight, some off-stream. I actually played with one of my newer friends, Raven McPherce. We played for a long time last night. Oh yeah, Final Fantasy V. I thought I had beaten the game, and I had forgotten there's more game after the first big X-Death battle. So, oops! More game!
X-Death 2. More deathing, more X-ing.
The title of my stream was Who Names Their Kid X-Death Anyway?
That's a good question.
Yeah. I was doing some Wordscapes. I'm trying to think of something else that I want to play, you know, just to kind of, you know, change things up. My schedule changes probably the week before. I think it's the week before I go back to work. No, the week after I go back to work, which is going to be the 20th. That's next month, by the way. So, I'm actually, my days off are all going to be together. So I don't know what that's going to do for what games I'm playing or what I'm streaming. But I mean, that's kind of been the vibe right now, is just, you know, playing the familiar, playing the fun, mm-hmm. you know, because that's all I play for is familiar and fun right now.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with some comfort food.
I'm just trying to think of though something a little bit new that I want to do. That's all.
Loki, we'll go to you. How was your gaming week?
I just played Minecraft. So I was finishing up an episode of Channel 64. So I did that this week. And then this whole week, I'm taking off to work on content. Of course, they'll probably not end up happening. But that's the plan, is to work on content. So I have three different things going on at the same time, as per usual. So I've got the Monsters and Mechanics series that I started like a live stream of. I want to live stream more of that, but I have an actual like episode coming up for that I'm doing a build. So I was gathering materials for that. And then I started a Vault Hunters on a Vault Hunters server with some friends from the Nerdcraft SMP. So they're playing over there right now, and I got to check out Vault Hunters 118 a bit, which is fun. If you haven't played it, it's the quick overview is that basically it's a different type of gameplay where you gather materials and you go run these vaults, and it's all about collecting loot. And then with the loot that you get, you can also level up, and then you start unlocking like different mods and whatnot. So it's pretty awesome. Neat. But yeah.
All right.
That's about it.
That's it. My gaming week, as I talked about last week, World of Warcraft, Shane's in chat, and we've been playing a lot together. I've been playing on my own. Like, I have a character I'm leveling with him, and then I have one I'm leveling on my own. But Final Fantasy XIV did announce something that has my interest, so I think when you hear me talk again next week, you're going to hear a little more split time, because there's a new Moogle Tome event, and if there's anything I love in Final Fantasy XIV, it's more fucking cosmetics as rewards, so I do want to go back and experience that a little bit. So I don't know. I don't know how long I can juggle two MMOs, but I had a lot of fun streaming it the other night. We did a stream on Friday, night, I think, so it was fun. Other games I played this week, I think I did some Dead by Daylight. I believe I was on one of your streams, Dark Sakura. We played, because I remember you, me, and Gwen playing a little bit one night.
We did, and yeah. We were also joined by Loco Poco.
Yeah, who has to carry us all. Yes, he's so good at the game.
I know, right?
And what a hero. He'll die on hook so we can get out. So yeah, he was a good sport. So yeah, that was fun. I had fun doing that. I definitely need to make sure I join at least once a week. So, oh yeah, Fenara brought up her double finger moment, her double middle finger moment. So
that was brilliant.
That was great. And I clipped it, but you guys, I don't think I was in that match. No, I was, because I remember commenting. It was the three of us. So Loco Poco wasn't there. And yeah. Wasn't it a pinhead, sweaty pinhead?
That it was a very sweaty pinhead.
Was like slugging and all this stuff. I don't know. Like it was just, the pinhead was just a pain in the ass. And the chain hunt was going on, so everybody was slowed. But thank God, when the hatch spawned, it spawned like right near where Fenara was, and she was able to get out. And that felt like a really good way to stick it to that pinhead.
Right the hill there. That was beautiful.
Beautiful moment. Beautiful moment. And that actually also felt extra good because Fenara was usually the first one to die on Hook. So I'm glad she got to be the champion in that match and really stick it to that, you know, P-Hitty. So, all right. Let's see. What else during my gaming week? There was that Dead by Daylight. There was, I've played something new. I played Soul Survivors. So I've been into the Survivors genre lately because of Vampire. And I kept saying, I think I'm going to check out this Soul Survivors game. I've seen other people streaming and so forth. I did download it and check it out. And it's fun. It's pretty addictive. It's one of those things where I'm like, I'll just play one more round. And it's like 20 minutes later, my round is finally ending because I'm getting better at the video game. And I'm beating more Titan bosses or whatever they're called. So it's good. It's a Survivors game, but it's more modern graphics. It uses the more 2.5D kind of graphics as opposed to Vampire Survivors kind of looks like ripped off Castlevania art. Like, I hate to say it, but it you know, that's what it looks like. It's part of its charm, though. And I think what drove a lot of people to it. This one has a little more original art, but it looks really nice. And it's a lot of fun to play. So good. Infinaris is poop clicker. 20 minutes of what the hell did I just play? Seriously, it's a cookie clicker 3. So yeah, there's that. And then yesterday, some friends and I went out to do Pikmin Bloom because it was community day in Pikmin Bloom. Keep in mind, though, yesterday it was storming here, especially in the morning. So we were like, how the fuck are we going to do Pikmin Bloom Day? Because usually we'll walk downtown or we'll walk around the college or, you know, somewhere to get 10,000 steps in. And usually there's a community day for one of the other Niantic games as well, be it Pokemon Go or Ingress. And there really wasn't this time. It was just Pikmin was doing its thing. Ingress was having an event in Japan, but it didn't affect anything here. So we were trying to find a place to walk. We tried to go to the mall out in Roseville because we thought, oh, it'll be empty because of the storms. People are going to stay home. Ha. That place was a disaster. We couldn't find a parking spot and we left. So we were like, fuck it. So we left. We ended up walking.
Shopping season.
Yeah, I guess the need for the holiday shopping superseded the storms and people staying home. We should have. I was like, I thought malls were dying. I thought everybody was bitching about people going to online buying now. But boy, you wouldn't realize it over there. So there's a cute little old town not far from there. We just went with a ton of Pokestops and Pikmin stuff. So we walked up and down there because it happened to be sunny for like a 2 hour break right around the time we were not sunny, but clear. So we got our steps in. Thank you very much. And that was a lot of fun. So, all right. That was pretty much my gaming week. All right. Let's move on and get into some more gaming news. And we'll start off Loki with another big headline from the week.
Yep. So the Federal Trade Commission has sued to prevent the Microsoft Activision deal from going through. And, of course, I mean, it's a weird thing.
I get why.
Yeah, I get why, but also at the same time, Discovery Warner, HBO or whatever else. I mean, like, okay, let's come after Microsoft, but let's not go after these other guys.
I also get why, and this is the way I phrased it when I was talking about it on Mastodon, is that my desire for the big fish to stop eating the other big fish is superseded by my desire to see the management at Activision Blizzard changed. And this is going to get that done. So this is the whole thing where it's like, I don't love the big companies buying other big companies. And I understand people are sick of seeing that in this industry. Activision Blizzard in particular is a problem in its current state and it needs to be fixed. And therefore I'm like, government, just let this one go. But I understand their concerns.
Right. Basically saying, you know, Microsoft has shown that it can and will withhold content from its rivals. Today, we seek to stop Microsoft from gaining control over a leading independent game studio and using it to harm competition in multiple dynamic and fast growing markets. I completely disagree with that, considering that we've already seen that they're still they were complying with the agreements that were in place already for Bethesda games on Sony's platform.
Minecraft is one of the top selling games on the Switch.
They have their games on all these different platforms. They've committed to putting those games on other platforms. If anything, Sony does that. I mean, it's kind of weird to hear that, but whatever. But in response to that, though, they have entered in a 10-year commitment to bring Call of Duty to Nintendo following the merger, and as well as putting it on Steam, even though I think it already was on Steam.
But it is, yeah.
It will still be on Steam for the next 10 years.
Didn't Gavin come out and say, thanks, but we trust you? Like, he was like, you didn't need to, like, sign an agreement. I thought it was it, because Gavin came out and said, Gabe Newell, head of Valve, came out and said, like, you guys...
We didn't need a contract,
and you should be able to merge. So he's kind of supporting it, which is interesting, because if you think about it, Xbox on the PC and Game Pass in particular is kind of a competitor to Steam, but that hasn't stopped Microsoft from releasing their games on Steam.
Right. And Brad Smith, the Microsoft president, said also our acquisition will bring Call of Duty to more gamers and platforms or whatever, and that's good for competition, good for customers. Also wrote a thank you tweet at Nintendo. Hey, any day Sony wants to sit down and talk, we'll be happy to hammer out a 10-year deal for PlayStation as well.
What were you going to say, Jamie?
Nothing.
Oh, okay, sorry. Now, a lot of people are also joking about LOL Call of Duty on the Switch. I think there's some stuff to read in there that it sort of, I mean, we all know it's coming, but this doesn't mean that if they're going to support Call of Duty for 10 years, it's all going to be on the Nintendo Switch. I think this just screams that Call of Duty will be on a Nintendo successor. I know a lot of people are also talking about cloud gaming, and yes, the Switch can handle the cloud and all that stuff. I feel like what we haven't seen, at least on Nintendo's platform yet, in America, and that's a key distinction, in America, is multiplayer cloud gaming on the Switch. Everything that's been released, Resident Evil, Control, have been like single player stuff. I'm not saying it can't handle it or that it would function much differently. I'm just curious if the cloud stuff is popular enough in the US. I would really want to see what the sales of Control or those things have looked like, because I just feel like, yes, cloud gaming is a way they could do it. That doesn't mean that's how they are going to do it. I'm not convinced, especially until in Japan, this is a different story, but Call of Duty isn't a Japan issue either. Like that game, I mean, I'm sure there are some fans over there that import it just as, you know, we import stuff from there and so forth, but it's just, it's a non-issue for the Japanese audience. I just feel like the cloud thing isn't really proven as a big, like you're not going to sell Call of Duty in large numbers on a cloud Switch game yet. 10 years down the line, I think cloud gaming is going to be a lot more integrated, even by Nintendo, and the story is different. But I think this just sort of confirms Nintendo's got to be working on beefier hardware. But at the same time, right, if they got No Man's Sky running on the Switch, then shit, they can get Call of Duty running
Well, yeah, but like, just because you're able to like really...
just because they can doesn't mean they should.
You can super optimize that game doesn't mean it's a testament that it will run anything. Like, it really won't. And to the actual quotes we had from like Nintendo. So Nintendo commented by saying, Nintendo confirms the accuracy of the Microsoft statement. We have nothing further to announce on the topic. And then Gabe Newell, his statement was, we are happy that Microsoft wants to continue using Steam to reach the customers with Call of Duty when their Activision acquisition closes. Microsoft has been on Steam for a long time, and we take that as a signal that they're happy with the gamer reception and that what we're doing. Our job is to keep building valuable features that for Microsoft and all Steam customer partners. Microsoft offered and even sent us a draft agreement for the long-term Call of Duty commitment, but it wasn't necessary for us because, A, we're not believers in requiring any partner to have an agreement that locks them into shipping games on Steam or future, was it distant projects or whatever. That's a dig at Epic. B, Phil and the games team at Microsoft have always followed through on what they told us, and we do trust their intentions. And C, we think that Microsoft has all of the motivation they need to be on platforms and devices where Call of Duty wants to be. So yeah, I think they're right. Yeah, it's got to be on like as many platforms as possible. Then yeah, sure, like down the road, you know, they can start trying to get more people on their platform using that as leverage. But I mean, I don't think that hasn't really been their strategy with like a lot of things, like, you know, so I don't see why they would continue doing that. That's why, like, you know, when I look at stuff like this, like, I really wish the government would come after like other companies a little harder instead. Like we have, you know, Microsoft talking about merging and they're not like saying, oh, hey, yeah, we made them create Call of Duty, you know, for next year, but then we just scrapped it because we're going to write it off as a tax write-off thing, you know? Oh, even though it was done and everything, you guys will just never play it because it's a tax write-off. You know, that's the stuff that, like, Warner Discovery things going on. You know,
get them.
Like, canning...
Get her, Jade. Get them.
Yeah, they're canning fully made movies and stuff, so it just doesn't make any sense. Like, go after them. That's the type of stuff you should be going after, but... I get it. You know, any acquisitions that further monopolizes the space, any, you know, industry is not good. But, like, I think I'll pick the lesser of the two evils here, and I would have them go after Discovery.
Yeah. Some comments from chat. A lot of you have your opinions in chat, for sure. She-Hulk 10 in chat says, if Sony and the FTC block the deal, Sony will buy Activision a year later. You know,
of course,
they would try. Absolutely. And I think that would be so shitty because Sony is a bigger company in some ways than Microsoft, especially with the whole TV and electronics end. You know what I mean? It's wild. Let's see. Other comments in chat. DJ Rama S says, can't be a monopoly when you only have 14% of the market. I mean, facts. Like, again, Nintendo is a huge, huge player in this space. And it seems like they're totally being ignored by Sony. It's weird.
Well, look at what Sony does with like the Spider-Man property. Talk about monopolistic and not letting their thing be on other platforms. Mm-hmm. Like they hold that stuff hostage constantly. So hot kettle black.
The only thing is I'm going to be interested if it does. So yeah, SG100 Matt says Congress is stupid and doesn't know the facts. I mean, but I actually, the one thing about this process that I do like is that hopefully it leads to, I don't think it's going to lead to televised hearings, but it'll lead to hearings that are on the public record. Maybe it could be on C-SPAN, I guess. You never know. But it'll be a hearings that are on the public record. And number one, we're going to get so much NDA locked good shit that's going to come out in the papers and all that stuff. Like we've already been getting, like the PlayStation 6 thing from last week, right? Like it's all fucking coming out in these like court documents and stuff. So we're going to get some good gossip from all this stuff that goes on the public record. So that'll be fun in some ways. And two, I'm kind of looking forward to the way the Microsoft lawyers are going to drag Sony right back. And I think there's a lot of this that kind of maybe needs to come out on the public record. And again, I'm not trying to be anti-Sony or anything. I'm really not. I love all the gaming companies equally. But as I said in the beginning, this particular merger, Activision Blizzard needs to change, and this is how it's going to change. And it's no different if Sony just buys them next year. You know, it just delays this whole thing. So anyway, and also SG100 Matt with a good point. The difference is that gaming doesn't have lobbyists funded by multi-hundred-million-dollar or millionaire funds like tobacco and so forth. And also points out FTC hearings aren't normally public or TV. Congressional meetings are, but I think Congress is going to be backed up with other nonsense hearings starting next year. The House might be, but not the Senate, unless the Senate takes up the January 6th thing.
Industry has lobbyists. For sure they do.
Oh, for sure they do. They do. In fact, there's a whole lobbying. The ESA is the lobbying group.
Look at all the good they've done.
Yeah. That and to be fair to SSU100 Matt, I too would sometimes forget that there are lobbyists in the gaming industry. DJ Rama S points out, you know, another like, why aren't they looking at this type of issue? That Saudi Arabian media conglomerate, the one that owns SNK Playmore, why is that not being looked at? There's a like, you know, that's the thing. If this is going to go to public hearings and stuff, then fine, let it. But let's get all the dirt out. Let's get it all out there. Let's get ugly. I want it to be the Real Housewives of Silicon Valley. That's what I want those hearings to be. Prostitution whore. That's what I want Microsoft to do at those hearings. All right. Anyway. One other thing that Microsoft may have to answer to at those hearings, the fact that they're going to be upping the cost of their first party games. But you know what? They weren't the first to do it. So I think they're pretty much the last of the big companies to do this. But the inevitable has come, much to Loki's delight, I'm sure. that Microsoft's first party games will be going up to $70. Starfield, Forza Motorsport, Redfall will have the new pricing there. This price increase, Microsoft said in a statement, will reflect the content, scale, and technical complexity of these titles. Also, Microsoft reiterating, you can still get these through Game Pass. $9.99 per month to start. You can guarantee the price of Game Pass is going to go up too. Guarantee. So if you want to stockpile Game Pass like before the new year, like again, I don't want to tell you how to spend your money, and I can't predict the future, and I make no guarantees, but let me put it this way. I personally will probably buy another year of Game Pass and add it to my account so I'm locked in for at least another year. Technically, you could do it up to three, but that gets a little pricey for me. But at least for a year, I want to lock in and be good there.
I'll say what I said the last time we talked about the prices going up is that I expect a $70 game then. A $70 game is one that functions correctly and isn't followed by a roadmap telling me how you're going to finish the game. That's the way it works. Also, I'm not going to pre-order any of your games, so that's the other thing.
And what
just delay the game and bring out a finished item.
Well,
even when they delay the game, it's still bad. Like they did that with Saints Row and they delayed it and then it still was bad. And like it doesn't matter.
Starfield has been delayed. So, I mean, I hope that means it is going to be a solid title. Again, I want to believe Phil Spencer. I want to believe. Put it on my X-Files poster. I want to believe Phil Spencer gets it. I do. Like, I feel like, again, across all the gaming executives, I feel like he's the one that gets the current like gamer mentality more than anybody, but the games have to speak for themselves. Right. And he's not infallible either. So anyway, but as pointed out, Sony has already been doing this. Ubisoft's been doing this. Take-Two's been doing this. God of War, Ragnarok, Assassin's Creed, Mirage, NBA 2K. They're all $70. Also should point out this also it's not just going to be for, Xbox Series. This is PC as well, is now at the $70 price. I kind of echo the thing, I understand a $10 price increase, especially in the day of, you know, with inflation, blah blah blah, when cartridges used to be more, if you know you wanted to say that, and so forth. But again, yes, give me a game worth $70. If you put out half-baked games, you're just going to encourage your audience to wait for a sale. Less and less people are going to be willing to buy day one, which is what you want, industry, because now look, all the games, they're not all coming out just for the holiday anymore. I feel like, especially looking at the Game Awards, it's either the very beginning or the very end of the fiscal year is when they're trying to get all the games out now. Actually, more the end of the fiscal year, June. Hello. They're trying to get all the games out by the end of the fiscal year. So, but if you release at the end of the fiscal year, then you're trying to make a big day one or week one splash. Like Final Fantasy 16 is releasing June 22nd, right? That leaves it like a week and a half in the fiscal year to move a lot of copies.
No, here's just another thing to throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
What's to say that some of the price hike is to get the super excited people, and then they put it on sale to lower it technically back down to a regular price.
Oh, we're already set. Like Gotham Knights, that happened with. Yeah. Like it was like Gotham Knights was out, what, like 3 weeks? And then it was on a Black Friday or one of those sales. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but this way, though, they can keep manipulating the market, too. Mm-hmm. So it's just all a bunch of bullshit.
Miltonius Games in chat says more people will wait for sales and the sales will come because so much of the money is made with microtransactions. They need people playing the games. Questbuster says one nice thing about getting a PlayStation 5 late, finding cheap copies for games like Returnal. That's true, because when Returnal comes out on PC, which I am excited about, it's probably going to run $70, which I'm less excited about. Gigi Romas says, I'm bothered by the $70 price tag only because I've gotten so used to cheaper prices during the PS1, 2, 3, Xbox 360 era. Secondly, I still think it's bunk that the prices are going to be that high. Yes, I do understand that the tech and research costs have gone up, but the production media is still cheap. But I've noticed lately most places aren't selling CD and DVD spindles anymore. So, yeah. You know what, though? There are a lot of games that are still going to be $20-$30. Hades 2? I bet it's a $30 game tops, $29.99.
It wasn't even that expensive.
Yeah, I think the first one was only $20. So yeah, I at maximum that's going to be a $30 game, and maybe another $20 game. Vampire Survivors making waves, $5 game. So thank God for the indie scene and smaller developers to still be providing a perfectly acceptable quality of game market out there as an alternative. So it's going to be very interesting to see how many people buy into the $70 price tag. But then again, I'm part of the problem, I guess, because I'm looking at certain games and I'm like, yep, I'll pay it. I want to play that game. I know I'm going to have a good 50, 60 hours with this game, maybe more. So I'll drop it. Some folks in chat are talking about cartridges in that whole era. SG100 Matt says, it still amazes me that games were $60 to $70 back in the 90s. Granted, consoles did cost less. Yeah, that's because all the tech was in those cartridges. Remember how much the Neo Geo cartridges cost? But that's because you were...
How much they still cost right up until the end of the thing.
Because you're literally getting an arcade board in those cartridges. I mean, the tech is in the cartridge. The console's in the cartridge, practically. So
I mean, it really is. Like, the cheapest one I ever bought brand new was King of Fighters 2000, and mm-hmm. it was the only one I had ever seen that came out for under $300.
Mm-hmm. DJ Romes says, I remember seeing Phantasy Star 4 and Virtual Racing going for almost $100. Yeah, I think because those games in particular had a ton of RAM on them, right? Like, didn't they have like 64 megs of RAM, which for the time was huge? I might be mixing this up a little bit, but like they had a ton of memory on those cartridges. So that those games, because Phantasy Star 4, huge game, Virtua Racing, huge game to run those graphics and such, you know, that's why those cartridges got really expensive, was because you had to put more and more memory on them. Shane in chat says, I think Supergiant can get away with the cheaper prices because you know they make a crap ton off merchandise. Good point. Their stuff constantly sells out, and they couldn't even run their own store at a certain point and had to hand it off to another company. Well, when you talk about merchandising, when you talk about that, I think of Minecraft. And you know what? Microsoft only charges $20 for Minecraft, but right in line with your comment, there's a whole fucking Minecraft aisle at Target these days. You know, like, Minecraft is huge. Fortnite, free. Also merchandising and obviously a shit ton of microtransactions and so forth. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else is, like, Stardew Valley. Does Stardew Valley have merchandise now at Target? I'm trying to think what other video games I see with merchandise at Target. Five Nights at Freddy's. Another example.
What's the other one I've seen? Piggy. I don't know what that is, but I think it's a game.
Oh,
Yeah, it's a Roblox game.
Oh, that's why. So, yeah. No, yeah, merchandising. You can make a lot of money off that, too, for sure.
We'll wait until we get our Neopets back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. Dark Sakura. Also, some other good change in the industry, right?
Yeah, so this one is a very positive thing. So a Microsoft-owned company called ZeniMax Studios, they actually have just recently, the devs have anyway, have unionized 300 of them, about 300. It's the QA staff at ZeniMax, including developers across Bethesda and studios that have worked on, like, Elder Scrolls Online, unionized with the Communications Workers of America. And instead, like the union drives that have been going on with some other companies, basically we're like, we're sticking to it. We're going to keep at it. The quote is saying, we applaud Microsoft for remaining neutral through this process and letting workers decide for themselves whether they want a union. The company is fulfilling the commitments they laid out in their labor principles earlier this year while sending a resounding message to the video game industry. The right to freely and fairly make a choice about union representation should be in the hands of the workers, not the management. So basically, where all these other big companies, you know, like I said, Microsoft, Blizzard, not Microsoft, like Blizzard and a few other companies have wanted to arbitrate, you know, step in, control how the narrative goes. Microsoft is like, this is you. This is all you. They also organized the QA at Raven Software and Blizzard Albany. But the managers at ZeniMax have been given very clear guidance to remain neutral. Over about the next 4 weeks, the QA staff will either sign their union cards or vote through an electronic portal. And with majority support, the union will then be recognized by Microsoft and become the largest in the gaming industry. So good for them. Good on them. And good on Microsoft for that, too.
Yeah, I'm appreciative that Microsoft sort of sees the writing on the wall, I think, where this and the industry going. Again, another reason why I'm like, I think Phil Spencer gets it more than a lot of folks in the industry and is letting this go through, basically, and just letting it happen, because it will, whether they want it to or not.
I like the statement from the spokesperson at Microsoft. I'll just read it verbatim. The recent organizing efforts of ZeniMax employees and Microsoft is ZeniMax and ZeniMax's neutrality toward this is an example of our labor principles in action. We remain committed to providing employees with an opportunity to freely and fairly make choices about their workplace representation.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that's pretty big.
SSJ 100 Matt in chat with a great comment. The industry is slowly getting unionized, and it's a great thing. Don't listen to the industry when they try to blame the unions for the higher game prices. Good point, because they will. Making sure workers are treated and paid fairly benefits the people working on them, and lastly, the games themselves. Great point by SSJ 100 Matt, and quite honestly, a call out to the gaming press and the press in general. When you're going to print these CEO statements that are trying to blame the unions for the higher cost, you need to print what the CEO made last year right in the same sentence. Please print the if you're gonna print that sentence that the CEO blamed the salary, then the next sentence should be Bobby Kotick made X million dollars in stock, X million dollars in last year. Those two need to go together.
The other thing too is you also need to look at the corporate interests of the people of the companies that are reporting this information, mm-hmm. and what they're looking like for their union policies. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Mm-hmm. It's a big picture.
Well, sadly, just in time before the holidays, with Hanukkah next week and Christmas in 2 weeks, our industry's not being nice to some people.
It's like a yearly tradition. Hey, it's Christmas time. You're fired. So IGN has laid off some of their staff as well, just before the Game Awards, no doubt, as well. This affected some of their content engineering and ad sales, part of a large restructuring across Ziff Davis. So don't know exactly how many are impacted yet, but quite a few people have lost their jobs from there. Then, of course, to go along with that, you know, to get all your holiday shopping done at GameStop, well, they're also facing layoffs as well. Ironically, though, it is coming in the form of engineering staff as well. Well, right now, they also don't know what the impact of or how many staff were impacted, but it is at least six software engineering staff that have confirmed that they've lost their jobs there, but it's mostly impacted the blockchain wallet development that was.
I was going to say, I wonder if it's because that NFT market landed like a turd. Like it just like no one NFT, no one fucking T cares.
Touched
I don't,
it.
No one fucking touched it. Thank you. Yeah. The NFT marketplace, like that's, That's unfortunate, but, you know, because obviously the people making that were just trying to do a good job, you know, and I don't fault them, but, you know, it was a bad vision by the executive in the first place, who I'm going to guess was not laid off as a part of this, but probably should be. But unfortunately, that is how this industry works far too often. So, yeah, anyway, no one fucking touched it. So
At least it's not the retail workers at this point. I mean, I'm sure that they've also done different things to reduce headcount for whatnot, and they were still restructuring what they said. Well, yeah, now that we're emerging from our rebuilding phase of our transformation, GameStop has a strong foundation, blah blah blah, which to pursue profitability in the near term, substantial growth, and blah blah blah.
See, it's not wealth that trickles down, it's bullshit.
Well, it's a sinking ship that they're trying to, you know, shovel water out of.
And the NFT was like trying to.
It was dumb. Like
trying
where does
to
that
use
even
a dime to
in?
Stop, you know, a bucket size hole. So anyway,
that like anyone could have told them that was. I mean, people did tell them that was a dumb
people
idea,
did.
But
it's just they see dollar signs and it's different. You know, going back to the IGN thing a little bit, though, I feel like, you know, media obviously in general has been taking a hit, you know, obviously G4 and all that a couple months ago. You know, I was kind of thinking about, like, why does media seem to really be taking a beating? And, you know, when it was G4, I think we were just talking about, I think there was a lot of ways that, again, management, it was mismanaged and I think mismarketed. And I think they spread themselves too thin with seven different presences online. However, that being said, I think there was just also a lot of they had to compete with, you know, streamers, YouTubers, and just other homemade content. And I think in the case of IGN, it's social media. And like, just honestly, like accounts like Wario64 on Twitter. Now, I personally don't use Twitter anymore, but I recognize the fact that accounts like, you know, Wario64 and some of the other, you know, gaming, what, Nebelian at a time, and there's just, you know, and other, like, God, it doesn't even have to be somebody that exclusively tweets about it, just when you have a curated list in general, wherever you're at, Mastodon, Instagram, TikTok, you know, wherever social media you're at, I think a lot of people are kind of getting their news as a part of that now. And if IGN doesn't have a smart strategy, like IGN, if IGN's social media presence read like a Wario64 feed, they probably would be in a lot better shape. But it is what it is. So, anyway.
People.
Yep. All right. Moving on. Let's tell this is wild. So it came up on last week's show, or maybe 2 weeks ago, that Yuji Naka had been arrested. He was detained about insider stock trading, basically, that he knew that there was a Dragon Quest spinoff or something coming out, and he had bought some shares around that. You know, you're not supposed to do that. That's what Martha Stewart went to jail for, although many people could argue that, you know, she went to jail to be a symbol and all this other stuff, but I digress. Insider trading was hypothetically what she went to jail for. So Yuji Naka is now being accused of the same thing in Japan. So that happened a couple weeks ago. And now it's being reported he got arrested again about the Battle Royale game Final Fantasy VII, The First Soldier, which didn't they pull the plug on that actually? But
also,
yeah, they did. But he bought shares right before the 2021 announcement of the game. Of course, you probably know the name Yuji Naka from Sonic the Hedgehog, being the creator of that. But then, of course, he worked with Square Enix on Balan Wonderland. So one would imagine he probably did have some inside thoughts as to what was going on there. Of course, that will all have to be proven in a court. And I admittedly do not know how that works in a Japanese court versus a US court. So I will just have to rely on the news to keep me updated on what's going on with that. But yep, in this latest report, apparently he bought shares in A-Team Entertainment just before it was announced that they were going to create Final Fantasy VII, The First Soldier. He paid 147.7 million yen. That's over $1 million, just over $1 million for 120,000 shares. He was arrested alongside Taisuke Sasaki, a Square Enix employee, who also was arrested over that same aiming issue in the last month. Interesting. So, also to be noted, they released it mobile for, they released the game on mobile in November last year, and then less than a year later, it was shut down. No word if he sold his shares before that happened.
Mm.
But I doubt it.
Just people don't pay attention. They think that they're going to be above it, that no one's going to catch it when all this stuff is on the public record.
Yeah. It's just, and it's hard for some people, I think, to think with Yuji Naka, you know, and again, this whole thing is alleged, so we can't say for sure, but boy, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, right? But this whole thing with Yuji Naka, you know, it's like, oh, he's the guy that made Sonic the Hedgehog. I loved that game as a kid. Well, some of our childhood heroes, it turns out, are shitty people. It's unfortunate. All right.
I'm just like, what's the saying? Never meet your heroes.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's true. Anyway, Let's try to focus on some heroes that are hopefully less shitty in this next segment we like to do here at Orange Lounge Radio every week.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And while I get the video up here, Dark Sakura, what did you pick for tonight's classic game of the week?
It chose Street Fighter X Mega Man, or Cross Mega Man, however you prefer to say it. We're doing another fan game.
No, I love it.
And a crossover. So the game came out on December 17th, 2012. I know I'm a little bit within that 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fine, because we might be missing a week anyway. So, at any rate, the game was developed by a fan developer in Singapore named Xiao Zhonghui. I think I pronounced that right. And he did it as a labor of love, just a little, private development. And he sent an early build of it to Christian Svensson, who is Capcom's senior VP of consumer software at EVO 2012. And then he showed that build to several staff members in the Capcom office. And Capcom's like, "Hey, we gonna help you out." And he's like, "Cool." So he continued to develop the game based on his original design, but Capcom took over the things like the funding, the marketing, QA, and decided to distribute the game on PC so that the creator wouldn't have to deal with license for console development. Svensson said that Capcom could consider console releases in the future, but just chose to release it on PC so it could go out at its target date. There were some concepts that were scrapped in its creation, but let me rewind a little bit and tell you what the game is. So, the game, it plays like a Mega Man game. It has Mega Man or Rock Man right in the front. And you go through their levels the same way that, Mega Man always does. But your bosses are Street Fighter characters. You have characters like Ryu, you have Blanca, Chun-Li. I remember Rolento, Rose. What's the dude with the... Oh, I can't remember his name now. No, not Dhalsim. I know Dhalsim is in there, but the dude from Street Fighter 3. Oh, well, I can't remember. Anyway, Crimson Viper is in there, but if you clear certain conditions, you also can fight hidden bosses in the form of Sagat and Akuma / Gouki at the end of the game. It's not Urien, is it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's yes. Urien. That's it. Yes. Yep. Okay. Back to the development on this. Basically, there are other concepts that that he had to scrap that Zhonghui did. Yang was supposed to be in there, but was replaced by Chun-Li. Although his special weapon is still included via cheat codes. And he wanted to put alternate costumes for characters and a second playable character where it's one of the Street Fighter people, but that got scrapped. There were several complaints about the game crashing after it was released, and also about the user interface and the lack of a save system. So, in response, Svensson said that there was a patch being discussed, and then it was released on January 28th, 2013, as Street Fighter Cross Mega Man V2, and it had a better user interface, better controller compatibility, bug fixes. And a password system that looks a lot like the Mega Man 2 ones, and an additional boss character. The music was all done in chiptune by Luke Esquivel, also A underscore Rival. Esquivel became involved when he actually reached out to the developer to request being a full-time musician for the game. And he compared like his own stuff with the previous musician. And so he was brought on. He combined Mega Man themes and Street Fighter themes for certain songs. And he used elements like, for example, Ryu's theme mixes with Crash Man's music. So it's pretty cool the way the two marry. And then there's some completely original ones like the Wily Map theme and the beginning of the end theme. And the soundtrack was considered so popular that the soundtrack got released. I love it. There was an EP with four tracks that is called Street Fighter Cross Mega Man Extended Volume 1 on February 8th, 2013. It had four extra ones. It also had a remix of Ryu's theme, Young's theme that was unused, a voice collection, and Sagat's theme. One of the things I have to point out is how clever they mimicked speech. Like, if you go and listen to Ryu, even though it's not actually synthesized speech, it sounds like he's calling out his attacks, like in, I would say more based on the Street Fighter 2 version of them, just by mimicking intonation and tone from when he says it. I think it's quite clever. But the game actually really did exceed expectations. They haven't released any official real numbers for that first week, but again, they're like, damn, this was enough that it caused strain on their servers. This was noted by Capcom senior community manager Brett Elston. And by March 3rd, 2013, the game had been downloaded 1 million times. Got mostly positive reviews. The initial game had some very mixed reviews, but they listened to people. They put out that better one. But I mean, there were some people who were just way too critical. Like at Edge, they gave it a 5 out of 10, noting inconsistent level design and limited functionality as its biggest flaw. But I don't know. It plays like a Mega Man game. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's a really enjoyable game. The soundtrack is really part of what makes it shine, so I'm really glad that the developer went with A Rival, and it's a great game. It's absolutely worth bringing up. I have parts of the soundtrack on my permanent rotation on my video game music soundtrack, so. Mm-hmm.
Nice. There it is. Your classic game of the week. Street Fighter Cross Mega Man. Which is for a side project, again, very impressive, you know, because this really wasn't like an official Mega Man game, but you know, it's kind of embraced and
But it was enough that Capcom took notice.
Yeah, no, it's dang impressive. So I like that pick, because I like this game and I like these types of like fun little side projects that you know, get their
time.
It's
the little fan game that could.
Yeah, a little fan game that could.
It became a real game.
It did. It sure did.
And it didn't even need a blue fairy. It just needed Capcom.
Yeah. But I agree. The soundtrack is a real highlight of the whole game. Yeah, I can see some of the, you know, the minus points on the level design and so forth. You could even see it in those two stages that were being played here live on stream. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, at the end of the day, as far as like what it is, what it brings to the table, and just the fact that they designed it all that way, it still deserves massive kudos. You know, the game had probably zero budget, so, you know, It's amazing.
Well, I mean, I think it was cool that Capcom handled the rest of the side of it. They did actually give some funds.
Yeah.
For development.
I'm glad they didn't pull a Nintendo and C&D it.
This is the thing that Nintendo needs to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Is that look how lucrative something like this could be. Mm-hmm. What if they had put it out, for Steam for, say, $2, right? Mm-hmm. Now imagine $2 a million times.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just saying.
Yeah.
It may be chump change, but it's change.
Mm-hmm. Matters to somebody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that pick. Let's move on and cover some other video game news around the industry in rapid fire news. We will start with Loki.
So the latest episode of The Simpsons brought in a nice cameo from Roblox. Or in this one, it's Boblox, obviously. The whole premise of the story there is that apparently Bart was playing like an Assassin's Creed VR type game, and because it's too violent, Marge made him play a more kid-friendly game, and that's where they got into Boblox. And then he finds out that he can dupe some of the cosmetic items and sell them for real-world cash because their computer's so old. So it ends up this whole racketeering thing with Skinner and everything trying to earn money to, you know, fix up the school and stuff. And then there's like gang rivalries and stuff like that. So it sounds hilarious. It looks funny. I'll have to check it out. But yeah, funny to see Roblox and a Simpsons episode.
Still amazed that The Simpsons is still on TV making fun of current pop culture. It's pretty wild.
It is. And then Halo Infinite is getting a cool update this month with a custom game browser. So all those things in Forge now, you can check out and play them, which is pretty cool. And there's been some really neat creations, everything from Andy's bedroom to I think I saw Princess Peach's castle, and they have like different game ideas like paintball and stuff like that. So, yeah, pretty cool. Worth checking out if you have a Halo Infinite.
Or Game Pass to grab it.
Or that, yes.
All right, Dark Sakura. You got the mute on Discord.
There we go. So for anyone who is a fan of the classic series Toe Jam and Earl, there is a movie in the works at Amazon Studios. Especially since there was the crowdfunded game released just not too terribly long ago. But it's being produced by Unanimous Media, the studio that was found by Stephen Curry. Screenplay by Amos Vernon and Nunzio Randazzo, both who worked on Hotel Transylvania. And on Disney's upcoming Super Fudge series. I want to say I should have known about that. I love those books. But also is co-produced by Story Kitchen. So there's people with big names involved in this one. It doesn't say really a whole lot about it, so hopefully it'll go by the original game. You know, just that they get marooned on Earth, and they have to put their shit back together and leave. But I hope they keep the satirical nature of the game, so this would be, hopefully this will be good.
You caught the attention of several people in chat with the whole Super Fudge reference, Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing, that whole thing. Apparently, I did not know they were doing that again. Didn't they do a series or a movie or something a long time ago? It's been a while ago. Yeah, I can't remember either.
But I kind of would like something focused on Margaret.
Ooh, a timely update for that.
I've read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was really little. And because, I mean, these books were written in the late 70s, I think.
Yeah, late 70s.
I would love to have an updated story for Margaret if they're going to try to update, you know, Farley Drexel Thatcher.
Good old Julie Blue.
How I remember his Judy name Blue. For real. And what's the baby's name? Tootsie.
This is not the same author, but when I think of childhood books that were huge, like around that age, when I remember reading those books, like fourth grade and stuff. Thank you. Dijarama says there was a Super Fudge TV series in the 90s, ABC Saturday Mornings. Really? I didn't know that. Anyway. But I think of the Ramona books.
Ramona Quimby.
Yeah, PBS did do. Because that author died relatively recently, like a couple of years ago, and she was like 99 or something. She was, you know, up there.
Oh, yeah. Encyclopedia Brown. Oh, my God.
Okay, oh, my gosh. So
I know that they made a movie for it, and I have yet to see it, but one of my favorite books as a kid was from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler.
Oh, yeah, they did a TV, yeah.
Yeah, I loved that book. I've read that book so many times. Like, I used to have dreams of just moving into a museum.
The other one would be the Roald Dahl, but even though I believe wasn't he kind of issue-y, but I remember still reading like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I read The Glass Elevator, which
Glass Elevator was an interesting story.
Did they ever make that?
They were
movie?
Going to, and he denied it because he was displeased with how the movie turned out.
Yeah. Phil of Nine in chat says Dahl was canceled. All right. But you know what? I was like 10 when I read those books. So, but James and the Giant Peach was a huge one. I remember Disney did a thing on that. So yeah. So wow. Dr. Seuss says Beverly clearly was 104 when she passed. Get out. I thought she was like late 90s. I mean, I know she had a nice long run, but that's incredible. All right. Anyway, sorry. Rapid Fire News is turning into book chat with the Orange Lounge Bookio. All right. Anyway.
But here's the thing. Judy Blume is still alive and still writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. SG100 Matt says they did a remake of The Witches a few years ago. Yeah. Apparently it did not. It kind of landed thud. I guess people didn't want to see that one remade.
It was very creepy. Creepier.
Yeah, didn't Anne Hathaway play? Well, it was also true to the book.
She played the Grand High Witch.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she played the Grand High Witch.
Yeah. Because of course you know, but just for the audience, they completely changed for the 80s witches. The ending is completely different. But yeah, I believe the new one had the original.
Didn't like the first movie had a happy ending.
Yeah. Anyway.
He thought that him staying as a mouse was a happy ending.
Oh, let's talk about some games that were out around that age. We were reading all those books. Thanks to Arcade Archives, we got another game on the Switch that I'm sure is on its way to PlayStation as well. It's Pac-Mania was the game for this week. It released on December 8th, 2022. This, of course, was Pac-Man going 3D, although it was more like 2.5D, but that's what 3D was back in that era. And of course, that infamous jump button that made the game a lot easier. So you probably always got a little further in Pac-Mania than you did the other games. But yep, that is on the Switch eShop, and I'm pretty sure it's got to be on the PlayStation 4 as well as those hamster arcade archive releases tend to be. All right. Let's travel around the world and check out some games that will be out this week, although I imagine it's got to be slowing down. No? No, says Loki.
No, there's not much.
Oh, not much. Okay.
No, this week, though, we do have some big stuff. So we have Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. High on Life on PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series. Looks like AKA or Aka on PC and Nintendo Switch. We have Akai Katana Shin on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Azure Striker Gunvolt 3 on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. Blacktail on PC, PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series. River City Girls 2 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. And last but not least, Megaton Musashi X on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5.
Well, going to Japan and looking at the releases there, yeah, this Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion appears to be worldwide, so it's on Japan's list too. And that I did not realize that was still on deck for this year. That's a pretty big deal. So that is coming out on the 13th. On the normal release day in Japan, the 15th, we have some other games for Nintendo Switch, including Akai Katana Shin, comes out. Them's Fightin' Herds gets its Japanese release on December the 15th. The Cosmic Fantasy Collection is also out in Japan on that day. We also have WRC Generations. Tetsudo Nippon Rio Pro Tokyo Soko comes out as well. And because we have to have a SpongeBob SquarePants game, even in Japan, the Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated, not remastered, Rehydrated, is out in Japan on the Switch this week as well. If we go over to the PlayStation 5, just that same Crisis Core re-release is out on the PlayStation 5 as well. Otherwise, nothing specific on the 15th. How about Europe, Dark Sakura?
A literal handful. On the 13th for PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, we have Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, and then Hello Neighbor on Xbox. Hello Neighbor 2. That's all that's on my list.
All right. We have a few more stories for you, and then we're going to be inviting you all to participate with our show if you want to ask some comments in our chat, although you might want to hold off on any questions till we get to that segment. But if you want to give us a call, you sure can. All you got to do is head over to our green room over at vognetwork.com/Discord. And I would encourage you to join the Discord server and discuss things throughout the week with us. You know, a few stories in tonight's show roll were noted for the show roll because you posted them in Discord, like the $70 game price, Microsoft. Somebody had posted about that earlier in Discord. And I think we have one coming up too that also is from Discord. So we love to read and chat along with you all there. So I know everybody's trying to get you to join their Discord server, but I promise it's a lot of fun over at vognetwork.com. We don't spam with the everyone in the here. So please head on over. All right, Loki, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so there's this really cool mod that's been worked on by this guy, Jernay Gosar. He's a developer in Slovenia, and it's basically a mod that takes the cities that you've created in SimCity 2000 and ports them over to Minecraft. So he's said basically the reason why he made it was because there have been other mods out there that have put in the terrain from SimCity 2000 and imported into Minecraft, but nothing with the buildings. So he went ahead and coded it himself. And so it actually uses the SC2 format from SimCity 2000. And you can then pop it into Minecraft. It looks like he made it for a pretty old version of Minecraft because looking at the one he's flying around in, it looks pretty old. it does create structures, at least in the areas where you would have had those buildings. And so you can even kind of walk around some of them as well. There's like some basic interiors on some of them. But yeah, it's pretty cool. A very narrow use case for that, but still neat.
So I was finally pulling this up so I could see this myself, but it probably has a very limited use case, but it's one of those like neat. So it's actually loading in the save files from SimCity 2000 and converting them to Minecraft. Cause that's pretty cool.
I think what it does is it takes the save file from, SimCity and converts it into a Minecraft map.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But as you can see, like looking at the textures and everything here, I mean, we probably, like with some tweaking, you could probably make it look even better, especially with the block palettes now. Because I think, like I said, the version that he's running here, just based off of the glass textures and stuff.
Yeah, and the draw distance is much better now. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is. Like this is very old. Like you could make this look way better now. But you
that's
know
still
what?
Neat,
it's,
though.
It's fine. It's still quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just that whole concept of like taking a save file in one game and using it in another. Like, I love that. Like, it reminds me of how, like, what was it? Your Mass Effect save file could be read by Frog Fractions 2. Remember that?
What? Why?
I don't. It was part of the. It was Frog Fractions, Loki. Overarching question? You know, that's.
But for what purpose did it do that? Like,
it was it read something in this save file and affected the Frog Fraction story because that's what happens in Mass Effect. But also,
he found that article from December 27th, 2016.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Frog Fractions 2.
Right.
And they said that it wanted to import data from Mass Effect 2 save files into Frog Fractions 2. Upon doing so, a second screen pops up welcoming Commander Shepard. And they just it doesn't actually do anything. Oh. I think, it was... but it welcomes you as Commander Shepard.
Okay. That's okay. More akin to Psycho Mantis reading your save card and seeing, oh, I see you like Castlevania, you know, that type of thing.
It's like, oh, or when Cloud is all crazy and he says Xenogears. When Xenogears was coming out, but it was all spelled phonetically.
SSGO 100 Matt making a good old SimCity action news report saying the sun has gone down and creepers are storming downtown. If you hear hissing, run. if you don't understand the SimCity, and anytime this fucking game comes up, we always reference the classic CD-ROM that had the action news, and they were very poorly public access channel level acted bits that would announce when monsters were invading and all this. It was just to show off the video on CD-ROM. Otherwise, it was just fucking SimCity, but it was so bad it was good. Anyway. But these games and these apps have come a long way, haven't they, Dark Sakura?
And in fact, here's another development. There's an app called Calm, which is like a mindfulness app. It's going to have, if you have a Calm Premium membership, you can actually have the ocean of Sea of Thieves or the ambient noise of Zeta Halo from Halo Infinite playing in the background while you're meditating and being all chill. If you aren't a member, you'll be able to access that service for 3 months with Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And then after that, if you want to keep using Calm Premium, you get a 50% off discount for the first year. Normally, a full year is like $70. So they say that Xbox teamed up with Calm to support players' mental health and well-being. It has a collection of Game Pass titles to address mental health as well, for, you know, to give a sense of escapism, like Persona 5 Royal, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, Unpacking, and Stardew Valley.
Phila9 in chat asking a good question here, saying, do other people use video game music for meditation and relaxation? I listen to WoW and Minecraft a lot to chill and relax.
Minecraft music is super relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just interesting to me to hear Halo alongside Calm. I get that it's like ambient spaceship noises, basically, but I just think of like Xbox Live back in the day during Halo 3, and I think Stressed. That's the other app. So anyway, yeah. DJRama S says Persona 5 Royal should not be a game listed for mental health, but it's not the game. It's the ambient noises and the sound effects and that whole thing.
Oh, this one actually is a game that's listed as to help because it's escapism or something.
Oh, interesting. Well, aren't a lot of video games escapism at the end of the day, I guess. Interesting. All right. Well, moving on, let's go back over to Loki.
Yes, it's another week of what did Nintendo cancel this time? Or I should say, what did Nintendo cancel that someone else was working on this time? And today's episode is going to be followed by, or it is actually, I believe, Did You Know's Gaming. It was the Heroes of Hyrule was a video they were doing about a DS game called Heroes of Hyrule, which was a tactics
game. Watched it.
But Nintendo has struck it down because Nintendo being Nintendo.
It was a pretty good video. It was a long one, and they even put out like a bounty for something about it. But yeah, they did a really in-depth episode. It was a really good one. I'm glad I got to see it before it was taken down.
Yeah. So of course, you know, you know, it says the Heroes of Hyrule video was created using the same process and video editing style for most of the other videos on the channel. What sets the video apart is that one of the few videos on the channel that documents a piece of Nintendo history that was first uncovered and reported on by us. But, yeah. So that's unfortunate. It says, we've heard from several sources during the video's production that Nintendo was were becoming upset with the amount of former Nintendo employees that were willing to talk to, about and share material from unreleased games, failed pitches, and other canceled projects. This did not deter us and will not deter us from documenting video game history. As it should.
As it shouldn't.
They do amazing stuff.
And interesting, I did not know, it was obviously I didn't see the video, but Darksoccer, kind of, you bring up that bounty, and I wonder if there's something about that that Nintendo really didn't like. I don't know. It's interesting to me.
I don't know.
I mean, it was, there was a lot more in the video. They really did have a lot of former employees talking as well, different like drawings and some different things that were submitted, and you know, the few screenshots, you know, there was about it. They did a lot of digging because this had been really buried.
Yeah
it had been pretty damn buried.
Let me ask a silly question, but I'm sure it's something someone on the internet saying this somewhere. Do you think Nintendo pulls something like this because they're planning on bringing it back?
No.
Or was this so far gone?
I think they're just doing this because it's showing Zelda stuff, and so they're like, no.
That's so weird. They could benefit from some of that. Yeah, it's a part of video game history, you know, and I can't see in chat says Nintendo preservation. What's that? Yeah, it's so wild.
Instead, it's a copyright strike.
It's just like horrible. The old remember the old copies of Nintendo Power that were in the archive,
yeah,
or whatever, those got struck down too. So it's
yeah, because that was really hurting the bottom line.
Yeah, it's not anything. It's just they're being jerks.
Or protecting their IPs. That's what it's always like. Really, if Nintendo didn't do it, they wouldn't be able to have their IPs anymore. It's like,
I don't know about that though. Like, they're not really, it's not like someone's creating a game called Zelda out there. That's a little different than someone making a documentary about a game that was canceled. That's not protecting their IP.
Yeah.
That's just like, we're just not suing you because that's, it's not something that was worth our time.
When people do like,
you know,
the unauthorized behind the scenes story about the cast of Full House and things like that, or these books and stuff, they don't get shut down, you know, even though the stories are less than kind to some of the people that were on it. You know, it's one of those, they can't shut that stuff down. It's documentary from people that were there telling what's going on, and sometimes interpreted into a Lifetime movie and that stuff. Or what was the other one they did recently? The Saved by the Bell behind the scenes thing. And that was a, you know, disaster too, but you can't stop that. So it's yeah, wild to me that Nintendo can get away with it, but it's because YouTube, well, unfortunately, doesn't tend to side with the content creators, even though I thought they were supposed to start doing that.
It's, well, right, but it's, they're not going to take a stance at all, but it's more of, there is a process in place for this, but what that process would be is that you counterclaim it, or you say, listen, you know, I am, you know, not, I'm counterclaiming your claim or something like that, basically saying that, no, your claim is wrong. I am free to use this. And then you take it to the courts, and Nintendo will win because they have more money than you. That's really what it comes down to. And so because people don't want to take it that far because they're like, it's not worth it for me to be litigious about this and defend this in court. So then, of course, they're going to bully them into whatever they want.
DJ Rama S in chat says, Nintendo of Japan doesn't understand. That's why. This is all coming out of the Japanese office. And that, honestly, you're right.
It's going to just, it's slowly going to erode away, well, though, their goodwill.
Again,
what it is.
We need the gaming press that gets access to Nintendo to ask these types of accountability questions. And I realize they don't want to pick up the phone and just say, why did you pull that video? But Nintendo will be, sooner rather than later, promoting a new Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom. And when that game is being promoted, it needs to be asked, why, you know, since we're talking about a Zelda game, you once had a Zelda game that was in production, and there was a YouTube video that was trying to document some of this for history. Why did you copyright strike this? Why did you go after?
They just promoted that game at the Game
Then
Awards.
Then I'm saying that, but this is what the gaming press isn't doing that they need to do. Ask these questions. When they're trying to promote their product, you got to follow up with the tough questions. But they don't want to because then they'll lose
they
access.
They were working with Zeltic on the video, though. Zeltic is a really good Zelda lore person.
Yeah. Anyway.
I I was trying to check some of the archives, see if maybe someone had put it up.
I'm sure someone's already.
Oh, I'm sure. Once on the internet, always on the internet. If that master file is probably a torrent somewhere now. So, you know, I'm sure somebody within the Did You Know Gaming side probably didn't let that video go to waste. And I don't blame them whatsoever. All right. Well, speaking of Nintendo, I got one more story tonight, and it's about Mario Kart 8. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which of course was released on the Nintendo Switch some time ago, but remains one of the best-selling games on the platform. Like, who doesn't have that game yet? I don't know. But anyway, Wave 3 of the Booster Course Pack just came out, and with it, a new customizability option for the items. Unfortunately, no, it doesn't let you customize the actual items. That would be kind of fun to turn the, you know, mushrooms and things into other items. But what it does let you do is it lets you, when you are going to play online, you can play a custom items mode via the free update that brought the booster pack as well. You can choose which items are used in offline versus races, meaning if you want to disable the blue shell and only the blue shell, you can do that now. Yay. So that's the whole type of thing that custom items is doing, is allowing you to turn on and off what items you want to have in the race. Seems like such an obvious thing, but it's nice that it's there now. You know, probably one of those things that really did come through with feedback about, I'm sick and tired of those fucking blue shells. What can we do about it? So there you go. Mike Deft also points out the lightning item got nerfed. That I did not realize. Interesting. It probably needed it, let's be real. But you could also turn that off if you don't like that item. You could have it be green shells and bananas only, if that's what you want.
Soldier says, fuck the blue shell. I actually have a pin on my old purse that's the blue shell that says, fuck you.
It's all blue shells. It's all blue
Or yeah, or play
a game
mode.
I almost bought
all
a giant
shells.
One just so I could throw it at people.
That would actually be really funny, is like play a race that's all blue shells. Like, everybody carefully not being in first right up until the end. That'd be really funny. All right. That's it for the stories we had on deck tonight. So we're going to look to you all in chat if you have some questions for us over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. We'll take those now. Of course, if you want to give us a call, you sure can over at vognetwork.com/discord. Just join the green room and we'll get to some calls. Let me ask Loki, though, real quick, if there's any last minute stories or other things that came up that you want to bring up.
Riot Games is suing NetEase over Hyperfront.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Saying that it's copying Valorant. I mean, they do look very similar.
Little too close.
Basically, yeah, all of our creative choices are mirrored in NetEase's game. We don't think that changing the color of the character ability or slightly modifying the visual appearance changes the fact that it's copyright infringement. It's like the old saying, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. I love the fact that he added that at the end.
Comments in chat on other games. Phil of Nine says, I was shook when I logged into Spellbreak today and saw a countdown timer for the server shutting down. I had no idea, only 29 days left. Yeah, I missed that game.
You're doing the same thing for DVD Mobile.
DVD Mobile's shutting down?
It's going to be delisted, I think, for a revamp or something, but it has to do with NetEase.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Yeah. Like, they're saying, like, if you want to download it, do it now, which I think I already have it on both of my devices, even though I don't play it.
I think I had it once on my phone, but I got rid of it for the space. But maybe if I have it in my history, I can still grab it. I don't know. Weird.
That sometimes, no, if it's, okay. If the content is removed,
then it's gone. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, then you'll need to
like that MAME emulator that made its way onto the store that I grabbed on my iPad before it was removed. You certainly can't re-download that. So yeah, they can PT things if they have to. I get it. Let's see. I can't see talking about the Mario Kart story, pointing out it could be good for tournaments. That's true. But look out, because if you hold a Nintendo tournament, you might be up for a whole other disaster. By the way, wasn't there more follow up on that whole saga this week? Like that guy, that CEO resigned. I think I read.
Yeah, they let the CEO go, but well, he resigned as CEO, but he still owns the thing. So I don't know if that really makes a difference. Allegedly, so yeah, I don't know.
Great question from I Can't See in our chat. How do we email questions? I have a big one for next time. Please participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send those emails. Phil of Nine with a good question. What are y'all gaming over the holiday break? Me, I don't have much of a holiday break, so I don't feel like I exactly have an opportunity to get caught up on a backlog, so to speak, but I really want to finish Pokemon Scarlet. I really do. Like, I'm missing these Charizard events, and it's making me sad. So I want to do, I want to finish Pokemon Scarlet, that's for sure.
I'll probably Minecraft, and then I do want to play High on Life a little bit because that looks stupid.
Nice.
We're probably doing our retro game thing, on New Year's Eve, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm gonna keep playing the stuff I've been playing.
I might want to make a cameo. I think I mentioned that last week. I'm booked until like 9:30, but you know, I'll come over for the actual countdown. Yeah. Play some pinball.
Well, and if you wanna, you know, actually play on stream with me at some point too, or even I'm always down to play.
I'm sure. Another question in our chat. Hello. Poncho 72 is in our chat. Longtime listener, first time viewer. Well, welcome. Thanks for being here, Poncho. I like the burger time mentioning. So when we, for those that are only on the podcast feed and haven't been here on Twitch, Poncho notices that I have an arcade one up, which is a Burger Time machine behind me. Essentially, it's a Data East collection because it has, you know, Caveman Ninja, it has Bad Dudes and Karate Champ are all on it as well. But it's a Burger Time cabinet. And I always said from a long time ago that if I could ever get a Burger Time machine in my house, I'd get one. And the arcade one up, close enough. It's a limited edition too. They only made like 4,000 of them. And I was hoping to move some things around this weekend, but there's something waiting. That's all I'm going to say right now. I need to make a little space. So tune in next week. That should all be taken care of. I have to get an extension cord to set things up the way I want to, but stay tuned for that. But anyway, the real question that Poncho72 had here was, do you guys have any thoughts on the Evercade, thinking about getting one? Ironically,
you mean Ultracade?
No, Evercade. Those Evercade are the little portable devices that have the cartridges with packs on them.
Oh.
And there was a Data East one recently because I think that Data East one is on sale. I don't own one, so I can't give you impressions. But I kind of want one. Like,
they also have that portable one that's coming out here pretty soon.
Yeah, they have
too.
A portable one, and they have one that you hook up to your TV, and like the cartridges work in both, right?
Yeah. It's all universal.
SG100 Matt says that Evercade EXP was interesting, and then I saw that story about their entire stock being stolen. Yeah. But there's a lot of cartridges for that Evercade thing now. Like, aren't they up to something like 20 different cartridges at least?
Oh, it's more than that, I think.
Yeah, it's really been growing. I want to get one. Maybe I was going to say I'll ask Santa for one, but Santa already took care of business this year, so maybe in the future. 27... Okay, there's 27 retro cartridges. So like a Lynx collection, a Codemaster, Intellivision, those types of collections.
37, I think.
And then for arcade cartridges, they have another 8. But then they have a Commodore 64 cartridge as well, which, you know, I'm all about that. So yeah, I kind of want an Evercade, honestly.
Yeah, they have like the Intellivision stuff. There's also some of the Nest Maker people have games on there.
Yeah. So it's not just.
I would love to get mine on there.
Yeah. Right.
They have two collections of those. I will sell very cheap, like very, very cheap.
Yeah.
You could just put that on there and be fine.
You need to email somebody over there. How do I get myself one of the collections or something? Or figure out the producers of the prior ones and figure out their email or something. There's ways to figure it out.
I know the people like that have had games. I recognize their games. They're in the community. I just don't know like how you would even get on these cards.
Yeah. Poncho72 says I almost bought the home and handheld one for $150. So yeah, I'm thinking about it. Like, you know, it's obviously this time of year kind of stinks money wise, but that might be something I'm eyeing for early next year. I think the Evercade is a pretty cool concept. So.
Yeah, the home one now is only $100 too.
I still know what it is I'm wanting. That's lots of Steam gift cards. So I can buy one game.
Oh, the Marvel $100 costume edition.
Yeah, I want to play Midnight Suns, and I want the season pass. So the Ultimate Edition is like $100.
I understand.
It's annoying. Me and my love of having all the outfits and characters.
No, I get it. I get it. SG100 Matt says, I did see a review that the older Evercade cartridges have problems with the EXP, mostly just size, like you can't get the card out of the system when it's in, but they're apparently fixing the newer EXP models, the ones that were stolen. Jeez, that's too bad about the stolen ones. But
yeah.
Well, thank you for the question, Poncho, and if you do get your hands on an Evercade, I'd love to hear more about it. And it doesn't sound like anyone in chat has one yet. It's definitely on my radar. Just because I love the idea of the fact that the cartridges are home and portable, but just to get the arcade machines, you know, pretty relatively reliably on like the big screen, I think is always a lot of fun. So nice. All right. Well, with that, I think we're out of stories, and that means we're out of show. So we should go around and get everybody's final thoughts.
There was no email.
Yeah, I guess I should. I knew that, but the listeners didn't. Sorry. Yes, there was no email tonight. Participate at orangelaunchradio.com if you'd like to send an email for a future week, which it sounds like somebody in chat did, which is great. All right, let's go around and get everybody's final thoughts. I will say here at the end of the show, though, thank you so much for downloading our show and listening to it. Or if you were here live, that's awesome, too. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please tell a friend. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices here to put out on air. So a nice 5-star review on a site like Spotify, iTunes, wherever it is you found this show, that goes an awful long way. Also, just sharing on social media is great, too. You know, whatever you can do to get the word out, we appreciate it all. Thank you so much. That's all I have to say here. So let's get final thoughts. Dark Sakura, I imagine you are doing some Debbie Delight tonight. I saw Fanara in chat, so I imagine y'all are off to have some fun.
Yep, gonna go ahead and move on into the queue, opening up my game, and I would really appreciate it for people to hang around and chat with me, because that's the most fun part, is being able to have a peanut gallery.
Any final thoughts tonight?
That was my final thought.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh no! Give me Steam cards. That's my final thought.
All right. What's your username, Dark Sakura?
Dark Sakura.
Okay. Just making sure we send those. Just making sure we send those Steam cards to the right place. That's
You'll see a neon cherry blossom.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's the one I'm using.
All right.
All right.
You can always issue a correction on social media if you need to. All right. Have a good one. Have a good stream.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Loki, your final thought for tonight.
Hopefully you'll see more content from me this week. I'm hoping to get a lot of it out.
Sounds good. Sounds like you're going to be hard at work this week.
Yeah, hopefully.
My final thought tonight. I don't have a lot. I'm just thankful to still be doing this show after all this time. And the fact that there's people that listen to it means the world. And, the holiday season's really sneaking up on us, so I hope everyone has a good one. And 2023 will be here before we know it, which I can't believe. I'm going to be 45 next year. Like, time freaking flies. Can't believe it. All right. Well, that does it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. I hope you all have a wonderful night. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.